Welcome to Feminized. It's time for a show that turns the spotlight on the powerful women shaping cannabis culture. The cannabis industry is on fire and women are sparking it up. If you like the show, please subscribe. You can also subscribe to the Feminized Podcast with Liz Grubb on YouTube and Instagram. The future is feminized.
Hey sis.
You're now listening to the Feminized Podcast.
Welcome back to Feminized. Today, I'm so excited to welcome back one of my favorite people, Dr. Felicia Dawson. She is a board-certified holistic gynecologist and integrative and functional medicine practitioner who turned medical cannabis expert. She's not only respected in her opinions about medicine and cannabis, though, she's very, very, very well respected in her perspectives on the topic of reparations in cannabis. And so that's what we're here to talk about today, is hear Dr. Felicia's perspectives, learn more about what we can do to potentially help the movement and, you know, open up the dialogue. Thank you, Dr. Felicia, for coming back.
Thank you, Liz, for having me back. And I don't know if I'm respected on that reparations topic, but I certainly have some opinions.
Well, I appreciate that, you know, and I respect that. There are too many people who are, I think, afraid to share their opinions or who are even have fully baked opinions, to be quite honest. You know, they get swept up in what they're hearing in the media and, you know, with their feelings, and then they fill in the blanks with their own understanding. And that's, you know, one of the reasons why I'm just so happy to have this conversation today. It's important to have conversations like this so that we do fully understand topics that are so important, I think, to understand and steeped in so much emotion, because the cannabis industry is only getting bigger and bigger. There's millions of dollars, millions and billions of dollars being made. And, you know, a lot of people believe that this industry won't be right until we can get right with the communities who have been damaged the most acutely in the war on drugs. None of the things that I just said are any sort of fiction. Okay. I think this is understood and accepted belief that there have been communities and there have been communities of color who have been hurt by the war on drugs and thusly held back. And now we're making millions and billions of dollars in cannabis. And, you know, maybe how can we flow some of that money in that direction? That's how I've always understood the idea of reparations in cannabis. But honestly, Dr. Felicia, I'd love to hear from you. What is your understanding, or how do you define reparations when it comes to cannabis?
Well, you know, I think that most of us in the cannabis space understand that there's this thing called the war on drugs, and that people of color have had this war waged on them primarily. Yes. You know, we covered earlier, either this week, I think it was this week, Gretchen talked about an article about most Americans think cannabis should be legalized. But that same article stated that just a year ago, only 25% of Republicans believed that people of color were targeted more by the police. So those people may or may not be in the cannabis space. You know, only 52% of Republicans, according to the article that Gretchen covered, believe that cannabis should be legalized. So you have a three-fourths of a voting bloc who do not believe that the police target Black and brown people. And that is part of the issue. And those are some of the same people who have control over the purse strings of this cannabis industry, because most of the cannabis legislation is being written by lobbyists from the multi-state operators and politicians who are looking to line their pockets.
Right.
So, this is part of the reason why most cannabis advocates are talking about social equity. You know, we hate to say reparations because people shut down so fast. However, this country has paid reparations to multiple groups over history. And, you know, reparations just means that you do something or you pay something to make amends for something that was wrong. That's what reparations means. And we don't have, and we really should not really start with just President Nixon with the Controlled Substance Act.
No.
The Marijuana Tax Act of 1937 literally was put into being because of racism and fear of Latinos and Black people. That is the truth. And most drug laws around the globe, as we look through history, mm-hmm. is based on fear and racism.
Yes.
So right then and there, you have disparities. If we move in time up to the Controlled Substances Act, 1970, after the Supreme Court overturned the Marijuana Tax Act, Nixon constructed this law. It's part of a comprehensive law, but the Controlled Substances Act basically was put together to target Black people and anti-Vietnam protesters.
Mm. And don't we have him on tape saying such? I mean,
I don't know that we have him on tape, but we have him on tape displaying language that disparages Black people.
Mm-hmm.
He is on tape for making racist comments in the White House. Mm-hmm. Later, one of his people in his cabinet said that, you know, we couldn't make a law that says, you know, we're going to target Black people and anti-Vietnam protesters. So we made a plant that they use frequently, or some form of the plant that they use frequently, and target that. And that way we could bust up their meetings, bust up their families, put them in jail, et cetera, et cetera. So we know that that was all about racism, fear, control.
Yeah.
So despite that fact that, part of it was directed at anti-Vietnam protesters, when the laws got implemented, Blacks were still 4 to 6 times more likely to be racially profiled. And as recently as this last year, again, we covered another story where in California, the oldest medical cannabis market, the police are still profiling Black teens.
Mm.
It's, you know, we're in 2023 and this is still happening.
Mm-hmm.
You know, looking at the same things happening probably all over the country, but, you know, in Virginia, we're seeing it in New York. Mm-hmm. So it's still happening. So, you know, if we're going to make this plant free and legal and people can make millions and billions of dollars on it, those who bore the brunt of the war on drugs should be compensated, as well as their families, because there's a loss of property, jobs, and income. And I'm just trying to carve out a little slice of reparations, because I'm not trying to talk about 400 years of slavery, Jim Crow segregation. I'm not even trying to approach that. That's above my pay grade. But I'm just trying to talk about cannabis or reparations. We should be able to come to an agreement that Black and Brown people should be compensated for those who were affected negatively by this racial profiling.
How do you feel like that could happen in the most like tangible way, you know, the most real way? How do you decide?
I think that those taxes that they're, you know, generating should be divided up. I mean, I also think that with any state coming on board, there should be some degree of pardons and expungements of records. You know, that would be nice.
Yes.
If that could happen. That typically doesn't happen. So the next thing that should happen would be those who choose to be in the industry need training and help. And I've brought it up before that people who are already successful in the industry could mentor others to get a tax break.
You know,
if cannabis operators are saying the taxes are so high, well, how about you mentor some people and help them learn about the different aspects of business? Because someone knew how to grow a good plant doesn't mean that they know about how to process it or put it into products or run a business, you know? And mm-hmm. and frankly, everyone doesn't necessarily want to run a business.
Right.
And that is why I think cash should be part of the things on the table. And someone who could figure out what that would be could help, you know, implement that situation.
Right. So cash for the new, business owner, to support, to support their business and support getting a piece of this dream. That the thing that's now a dream, it used to be a nightmare, for, being Black, unfortunately, and driving, in a place, a young Black man driving in a car, anywhere is far more likely to just be pulled over. And that's, again, not a, it's not a political statement. It's so sad. That's what the data is just time and time again showing. So using cannabis as a pawn is wrong. So therefore we should use it to make things right.
Yes.
I think that just, that makes total sense. And, the idea of tax breaks too. I mean, I think that's where social equity, a lot of social equity programs are really, maybe trying to, well, they're trying to, what they're trying to achieve is to check boxes, I think most of them. But, some of the well thought out ones are maybe just really trying to achieve that sense of reparations, through these mandates, on businesses to, do what is deemed right. But I think it gets a lot of it gets lost in the politics when it comes under the umbrella of social equity. Whereas when we talk about reparations, we can, it's a very real thing, a very tangible thing.
And I'd like to remind the audience that, some specific examples of reparations in American history. One of the first that I'm aware of is the Japanese internment that we did during World War II. Over 120,000 Japanese Americans were rounded up during World War I and put into internment camps for 2 or 3 years. They lost about $10 billion in property and lost income, lost investments, et cetera. And in every case of reparation, the reparations were only a fraction of what was lost. So, but it's still people had the political will to make it happen, or the government had the political will to make it happen. Once upon a time in this country, there was a big eugenics movement where certain white intellectuals felt that the white race was superior to all other races, Black and brown races, and that the dis and also the disabled, mentally challenged, should be not allowed to procreate. They should not be able to procreate, and so we have forced sterilization, amongst people from the 1920s to 1970s. And interestingly, another bastion of medical cannabis legalization in Oregon was the last state to stop doing it. They did their last forced sterilization in 1981, I believe. So as
Oh my
recently as
God.
1981, Oregon was still sterilizing primarily poor Black women on welfare, because they felt like they should not be reproducing. We had the Tuskegee Institute, where 400 men who had syphilis were allowed to let that disease ravage their bodies on purpose so they could study the natural progression of this disease. We gave them a fraction of reparations. And lastly, Rosewood, Florida, a little Black town on the Gulf of Florida, where riots were there. Many Black people were killed. The town burned to the ground. Again, a fraction of reparations were given to them. So there's multiple instances where reparations were given in this country. It's just a matter of having the political will to make it happen.
Yes. So what do you think needs to happen to advance the conversation or, advance the understanding of what reparations could look like in the cannabis industry?
We need to make the ha keep the advocates at the table when the le cannabis legislation is being written. It seems like the advocates are getting it up to the level of the politicians where they're finally listening and finally willing to do something, and then advocates get kicked out the door, and the lobbyists for the cannabis businesses sit down with the politicians to write the law. To my understanding, that's kind of what happened in California. Crop something, I forget what the number was, but it's like all the growers came out of Homo County and tried to become legal, and they got screwed in the end because the lobbyists wrote the laws at the final minutes. So we have to keep the advocates need to be at the table at all times when the legislation is being written. The voters need to keep the politicians' feet to the fire.
Yes.
It's not good just to vote and then sit back and say, okay, well, I've done my part. You have to stay on these guys and make noise and demand that they hear you and execute the will of the people.
Yes. Yes, that is the most important and I think the most challenging thing, you know, about affecting change is that you have to be consistent, and these are human beings that you're working with, and you have to, you just can't let it go. You can never let your guard down. I feel just, you know, from outsider's perspective, looking in, seeing how New York has done things, you know, I think it's awesome. And I think that if they execute, you know, against what they are hoping to do and achieve there as far as social equity goes and, you know, keeping it New York, keeping it about New York, specifically New York City. That's what we're talking about here, right? It could be really cool. It could be really cool, but it just seems like these things just fall apart. You know, good ideas, they seem to crack and crumble under the weight of business.
Right. Right. And also, it's very important to always pay very close attention to your local politics and who's being elected locally. Don't just come out to vote for president. Come out every election and try to get people in office who are open to cannabis, if that's what is one of your priorities, you know.
Yeah.
Some people are one cause voters, but it's important to not just listen to politicians saying, oh, I'm going to make cannabis legal when I get into office, when they have done zero on the community level.
Right.
Or advocacy, zero.
Yeah.
Until they start running for office. You know, President Biden's been, he was clearly anti-cannabis.
Yeah.
Until maybe 6 months before the election and you know, changed his tune because he knew that was what would help him get elected. But, you know, pretty much everyone on that stage, every other nominee on that stage would have probably done a whole lot better in regards to cannabis than he would do, you know, with the exception of maybe Bloomberg, the other old guy on the stage.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, God, that's what we have to work with. The point that you made about making an impact and knowing who you are electing on your local level is just so powerful. That it really is the only control that we have on this local level. What vote can we cast? You know, and we are stronger together and talking about it and making sure that it's something that your family or your sphere of influence is thinking about as well. If you are the patient in the group, you know.
Right.
I think that that's really, really an important thing as far as, you know, cannabis goes, and having the courage to talk about what went wrong and who was wronged along the way. Mm-hmm. I think it's just so crucial.
And probably lastly, we ourselves probably, not probably, more cannabis activists need to run for office.
Oh.
We really do. We really do. And people always ask me, you know, you sound like you should be in politics. And I'm saying, well, you know, I would do it if I had the patience for the lying and the pontificating. I just don't have the patience for foolishness. I don't have that patience, but I will put all of my power, use all of my talents, treasures, and time to support the right candidate. I will work for the right person. But me myself, I don't think I will last long in that environment of lying.
No, as they say, you don't suffer fools gladly, and neither do I. But it's so true, though. Who will be able to, you know, to be spokespeople for what we really want? And what you just said was it popped into my mind. Why couldn't someone with political aspirations align with you and learn from you and be advised by you? I think that would be a very powerful thing for them, even if they haven't, you know, you've got to do some work in cannabis. You have to see what's going on. And then maybe you see who's doing the biggest things and leverage them in a very real way. Like, is that something that you're open to?
Sure.
So smart. That would be so smart, because I often feel sorry for these politicians. It's such a hard job. They need to know so much about so much, and they have their, you know, their topics that their constituents care about. And I'm thinking from the Texas perspective, but there's so many things that they need to care about that cannabis, you know, can be a very small thing on the list. And even smaller than that is social equity. Even smaller than that is reparations. It's like, wait, what? But having those conversations and pushing it at this local level, I think is just so key. And any politician would be lucky to have you, I think, on their team, Dr. Felicia, for sure. I think that would be a vote of confidence. So tell me, what advocate groups are working right now to raise awareness about this reparations conversation?
Minorities for Medical Marijuana, ACHEM, the Association for Cannabis Health Equity in Medicine, the Minority Cannabis Business Association, probably the Last Prisoners Project, but although I keep hearing different things about that, but there's several groups out there. The first three that I know for sure have had pretty good feedback from in terms of working on those issues and trying to raise awareness around them.
I thought it was the former
executive director of the Minority Cannabis Business Association wrote a white paper on social equity, but I can't recall her name offhand.
Okay, well, I will be sure to link to that page in the show notes, because it's so important to familiarize yourself with the conversation as it is happening right now, so that, you know, we're able to form, you know, our own opinions and really form our own kind of solutions to things that we see, you know, that we see happening in the industry. Maybe not, I shouldn't say that we see happening, because it's not really happening, but there are so many wrongs that need to be made right. This is one way and one conversation that feels more hopeful to me that, oh, okay, I can see a pathway there, you know?
It's just a matter of having the will to do it.
Absolutely. Well, I'm so appreciative of your time. Once again, very, very, you're very generous. And I want you to come back. I want you to keep coming back. Great. Anything, any news that you would like to share? Any events coming up?
No, nothing. I have different to share since last time we spoke.
Okay. All right. Well, you got to keep working on those books.
Yes,
because I'm ready to have the book club. And as always, Dr. Felicia Dawson, you are a treasure. And y'all go follow Dr. Felicia. I sounded like a Texan. Y'all go follow her.
I appreciate that.
Yeah, absolutely. Go follow her, Dr. Felicia. And thank you guys for subscribing. Thank you for rating. Thank you for reviewing. Thank you for telling your friends about Feminized and spreading the word about all of the wisdom that we have here in the cannabis industry in the female form. So until next time, bye.
If you'd like more, subscribe to the Feminized podcast on YouTube. Follow at Feminized with Liz Grow on Instagram. Special thanks to our sponsors, Moose Labs and Richard's Rainwater. The Feminized Podcast is a Grow House Media production, created by Liz Grow, produced by Patrick Poe and Dennis Rowe, with original theme music and audio mixing by Q at Q to King Productions in New Braunfels, Texas.